to speak today on a topic that actually has been close to my heart and my mind for a long time. And I'm sure it's something that a lot of us think about, especially people who are very busy. Sometimes our busyness is often an idol in our lives as well. But I would like to talk about time, and thank you for giving me the time to do that today. Yeah, not very funny. Okay, all right. So, I think intuitively, we all think of time as a very important, probably one of the most important concepts that exist in our world today. And most of us, you know, even, you know, people from different backgrounds, different faiths, different spirituality, we all intuitively value it in some way. And if we need reminding, this is one of the things that the secular world has no problem reminding us about. So just as an example, I literally just did a Google search on, you know, on this topic, just in the images, what sort of memes and, you know, I like to look at memes sometimes, what sort of things exist out there. And you've got, you know, the classic saying, time is money, you know, linking money with time. You've also got that on the top right as well. And you've got the one, my favorite one at the top, the bottom left, time waits for no one, dixit2success.com. So, you know, association with time and success. And the one on the bottom right was actually a gym ad, so to use your time in the gym, so time related to fitness. So time is related to a lot of secular aspirations and secular goals. Not necessarily bad things, it's not a sin to make money or to get fit or to be successful, but it's something that's very heavily talked about and, you know, valued in our wider world as well. But the main question I really have today, the big question, is does our understanding of the value of time and what we do with it change when we look at the Bible? So I have four main questions which will structure our talk today. First of all, what is time? I think if we sort of intuitively know what it is, but when you actually have to define it and explain it, I think it gets a bit more difficult, as we will see. And also, does the Bible even say anything about time? Do we actually see the word time in the Bible? Does it talk about it as a topic, as a theme, etc., etc.? And also, how do we understand time from the biblical perspective? So I guess you're assuming that the answer to the question two is yes. So question three is, what does it actually say about it? And what, most importantly, how do we apply this knowledge to our day-to-day lives? So the first question, what is time? So the simplest definition I can think of for time is that time is a fixed interval or period between two events. That is, it has a start and an end. Time can also refer to a fixed moment within this interval. But this is very interesting. It is very difficult to define time without using other qualifiers for time. So you notice that that definition included the words moment, period, and interval, all of which are qualifiers for time. I challenge someone with better English skills than me to try and define time without using qualifiers for time. I'm sure someone can, but maybe speak to me afterwards. But if you do think about it, for most average people, it is very difficult to define time as its own distinct entity without referring to another similar word. For example, if we say it's 3 o'clock, what we are really saying is we are labeling a specific moment within a greater length of time, which is a 24-hour day, or a 24-hour solar day. So the time 3 o'clock is only has meaning when we think about the greater context of time, which is the day. Biblically speaking, there is an evening and there is a morning. In the Genesis account, we read that. And hence, we know from the Bible that we start the day from the evening and we go into the next evening. Now, one of the key questions I would like us to think about for now is whether time has always existed or did it start from creation? So I'll repeat again, did time always exist or did time start from creation? This will be important later on in the talk, so think about that for now and put it to the back of your mind. It is difficult to develop a cohesive theology of time from the Bible, but it is mentioned very often. A quick search in the Strong's Concordance for the King James Version. There are differences in translations, but just for a rough idea, I had a look at that. And in that concordance, there are 619 occurrences of time throughout the Bible, and they're spread quite evenly throughout the Bible, both the Old and the New Testaments. There are 42 distinct Hebrew words in the Old Testament and 25 distinct Greek words in the New Testament for time, and I'm not including the plural forms. So it's a very, talked about common thing. Now, for the sake of our sermon, I don't have 4 or 5 hours to talk about every single word, so we'll talk about the three most commonly used words in both the Hebrew and the Greek today. So the first time, this is probably the most common Hebrew word for time in the Bible, et. So there is also a similar word also et, which is aleph tough for sort of a definite participle, but this word is ayin tough, which is time. And it's by far the most commonly used word for time in the Bible, in the Hebrew Bible. And most of the time it connotates the occurrence of a specific event, and it's regardless of the tense. So for example, if you look at Jeremiah 8 verse 1, at that time, et, declares the Lord, the bones of the kings of Judah, the bones of its officials, the bones of the priests, the bones of the prophets, and the bones of the inhabitants of Jerusalem shall be brought out of their tombs. The time here is the time when the bones of the sinners of Israel would be exhumed and left to rot in the sun as a disgrace because of their sins. The context here is, as most of Jeremiah is, just before the destruction of the first temple. It also can symbolize a suitable time, connotating the nuance of appropriateness. For example, in Psalm 119, verse 126, it is time, et, for the Lord to act, for your law has been broken. Meaning it was an appropriate time for God's judgment as the people were transgressing the Torah. A less common use of the word is for a season, as in Ezra 10 verse 13, which I think I've got. Yeah, I do. But the people are many, and it is a time of heavy rain. We cannot stand in the open. So the word here is et geshamim, which literally means time of rains. So in this context, it's the winter season in Israel. That's when it rains normally. So if you're wondering why I'm going through the boring specifics of the language, it does matter, I promise. So bear with me for this part of the talk. Another commonly used word is moed, which I think a lot of us will be familiar with in this congregation. Moed. The specific connotation of this word is an agreed or appointed meeting time, because these are the times God has agreed to meet us. So in Leviticus 23, the festivals are called Moedim, which literally means seasons. Interestingly, in the Torah, the tent of meeting was called Ohel Moed. An example of this is Exodus 28, verse 43, among many other examples. In this context, the Moed describes the place, not the time. So you've got Ohel, which is tent, and Moed. So you could literally say a seasoned tent of season, a seasonal tent. It's often translated as tent of meeting, describing the place, which was the tent. And this symbolized that God was among the people and could be met, not in a humanistic sense, but you could experience his presence in a certain place and a certain time that God will choose. In this context, time and place are interwoven, which is an important idea to hold on to. So that's another thing I want you to hold on to and put to the back of your mind, that time and place can be interwoven. And the Hebrew word zman, which is a common modern Hebrew word for time, it's mentioned in the Bible as well with a similar connotation, but much more rarely. I just thought I'd mention it quickly. And the third one is yom. So yom, as many of you would know, simply translates to as day. However, it is also used to refer to very specific moments of time. This is often done with a qualifier, such as this day or that day. For example, in Genesis 2, verse 17, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for in the day that you eat of it, you shall surely die. This word also has strong eschatological significance as well, as the end of the present age is often referred to as the day of the Lord. For example, in Isaiah chapter 2, verses 2 to 4, it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the house of the Lord shall be established as the highest of the mountains and shall be lifted above the hills, and all the nations shall flow to it, and many peoples shall come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, that he may teach us his ways and that we may walk in his paths. For out of Zion goes forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. So ki mitzion tetzeh Torah, that's where that phrase comes from, that we say when we take out the Torah. He shall judge between the nations and shall decide disputes for many peoples, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more. Now, according to practically every Jewish and Christian commentator, in this passage we are reading about the dawn of the Messianic era, which is described as the latter days. This implies that our concept of time is actually limited, beginning with creation and ending with the Messianic era. And the reason I say this is because you can't have a latter days if time was infinite, that if there's a beginning, there must be an end. And here we have a very specific mention of the latter days, or getting to the end of days. So it is from here, using a bit of logic, that time must be limited. There is a concept referred to as eternity, and it is seen as a source of reward for the faithful, righteous people that God will judge favorably at this time. Those who go on to be with God in eternity will escape the finite nature of time on earth. I'll talk about this a bit more later. Let's get into the Greek, which, to be honest, I'm better with paper as well. There we go. So discussion of the Greek, I will admit, I'm not as comfortable with learning about the Greek as I am about the Hebrew, mainly because I can't read Greek at all. So I'll just put that as a disclaimer. But I'll do my best for the sake of this discussion. So probably the most widely used word in Greek is chronos in the New Testament, and it's similar to the word et in Hebrew, so it denotes a very specific moment in time. Mostly used in a quantitative sense. For example, in Acts 1, verse 21, so one of the men who have accompanied us during all the time, chronos, that the Lord Jesus went in and out among us. That's chronos. There's also the word hora, which literally means hour. For example, Acts 10, verse 3, the ninth hour of the day. And the most interesting Greek word that I found was the word kairos, kairos. And kairos has the connotation of season. And there are strong eschatological significances of this word, I think even stronger than the word moed. So I think this is the word in the Bible which has the strongest relevance to both time and also the end of time as well. For example, in 2 Thessalonians 2, verses 3 to 6, Paul talks about how when the man of lawlessness will be revealed, for that day will not come unless the rebellion comes first, and the man of lawlessness is revealed, the son of destruction, who opposes and exalts himself against every so-called God or object of worship, so that he takes his seat in the temple of God, proclaiming himself to be God. Do you not remember that when I was still with you, I told you these things? And you know that what is restraining him now, so that he may be revealed in his time. So the kairos is the time when he will be revealed. Oftentimes, kairos also carries a more positive connotation as well, such as in Ephesians 6, verse 18, which basically says, praying at all times, so the times here is kairos, in the spirit with all prayer and supplication. So praying in the spirit is obviously a positive thing to do, so this is where it's a more positive connotation. And going back to the Thessalonians passage, I don't think I need to spell out what the man of lawlessness means. I think all of us would know that here. So I think we'll, as a result, you'll understand the very important eschatological end time significance of that word. But what are we to make of all this? How are we to form a biblically informed definition of time? What is the point of going through these, really painful details, really? I mean, even for me, like, who is interested in language, they're really painful little details. What does this all mean? What we should consider is that time remains very difficult to define. And that's important. We can't really get a clear definition of the word time, even from these words. However, there are elements of specifying key events within the grand continuum of existence. We can also describe its finiteness, its quality, and also where it occurs. To put it simply, the biblical concept of time is, I actually think, quite similar to the secular one. That's quite, I think, a bit controversial. I do think it's quite similar. However, there is the added connotations relating to its finiteness, its location, and its connotations relating to the events God will carry out in his grand plan for history. So I do think that these connotations make all the difference for us. Now, to my second question. Does the Bible say anything about time? Well, I think we can answer that question now. Yes? Good, okay. If the answer is no, then I may as well pack up and go home. And, so if the Bible does say anything about time, what does it say? That's the next question we should ask. So the first thing I think we can really look at throughout the Bible is it's important to make good use of our time. And there are innumerable passages I could point to. They're just four of my favorites. There's one from Ephesians 5, verse 15 to 17. Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. And John 9, verse 4. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. And that sort of implies, night will be the time when you wouldn't be able to work anymore. Psalm 90, verse 12. So teach us to number our days, that we may get a heart of wisdom. And Colossians 4, verse 5. Walk in wisdom toward outsiders, making the best use of the time. So we can clearly see here that time, or using time well, is referred to as wisdom. Referred to as wisdom. In this way, the world is correct in many ways. Using time well is wisdom. In the Ephesians passage, the context is of Paul encouraging believers to do good, to be imitators of God, and walk in love earlier in the chapter. So it is good to use time well to do the will of God. On a simple level, that could be why we need to use our time well. However, there is a deeper layer. So now I want us to note this passage from the book of James. There we go. So the book of James, verse 4, verse 13 to 17. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit. Yet you do not know what tomorrow will bring. What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. So whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him it is sin. So a bit of context is required to understand. So earlier in James, in verse 4, James warns, you adulterous people, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. So we understand this, and we come to verses 13 to 17. We read about a worldly motivation to use time well, to make money. So what James is talking about here is these guys want to use the time to make some money, which most of us do when we work. So it's things that most of us would probably do at some stage in our lives. However, James implies that the sole use of time in this way is arrogant and warns that their time is God's gift to them. In this way, we should learn that it is good to use time well, to do good, but the reasons for our use of time should not and cannot align with the motivation of the world. We should not use our time for selfish motivations, because even though time is a gift, time is fleeting, and that's very important. Time is fleeting. I put it in capital letters for a reason. And that's a very, I think, one of the biggest influences of our understanding of time. And I really feel in the New Testament in particular, in Paul's letters, it really highlights this very well for us. In the Torah, it is a bit more vague. You can find it, but it is more a bit less clear, I think. But in the New Testament, Paul really talks about this very well. So on one hand, we are encouraged to work hard. For example, Proverbs 10, verse 4, a slack hand causes poverty, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. In Galatians 6, verse 9, and let us not grow weary of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. But also, time is fleeting, and ultimately we are but a speck. Time belongs to God. Proverbs 27, verse 1, do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring. Psalm 39, verse 4, O Lord, make me know my end, and what is the measure of my days. Let me know how fleeting I am. Psalm 90, verse 10, the years of our life are 70, or even by reason of strength, 80. Yet their span is but toil and trouble. They are soon gone, and we fly away. A bit depressing, really, isn't it? went a bit too far. All right. So, what we're saying here, no matter how well we use our time, no matter if we take God's guidance for using time well, it'll eventually end. Eternity might not end, but time, as we know it at least, will certainly come to an end, even if we do not know when. Now, I want us to read this passage from 2 Peter together. So 2 Peter chapter 3, verses 8 to 14. And it says it so clearly, it's really awesome, actually. But do not overlook this one fact, beloved, that with the Lord one day is as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as one day. The Lord is not slow to fulfill his promise, as some count slowness, but is patient towards you, not wishing that any should perish, but that all should reach repentance. But the day of the Lord will come like a thief, and then the heavens will pass away with a roar, and the heavenly bodies will be burnt up and dissolved, and the earth and the works that are done on it will be exposed. Since all these things are thus to be dissolved, what sort of people ought you to be in lives of holiness and godliness, waiting for and hastening the coming of the day of the Lord, because of which the heavens will be set on fire and dissolved, and the heavenly bodies will melt as they burn. But according to his promise, we are waiting for new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells. Therefore, beloved, since you are waiting for these, be diligent to be found by him without spot or blemish and at peace. How do we know that when the earth ends, time will also end? We'll read that actually a bit later. Yeah, actually, I'll read it now. Yeah, so how do we know that? So what Paul is talking about here is the end of the earth as we know it. And it says it quite clearly as well. The earth as we know it will end, the heavens will be burnt up, and there'll be a new earth and new heavens. But how do we know that that is a time when time will end? Maybe time as we know it will continue in the new heavens and new earth. That's also a possibility. However, it is because as we learn from the Hebrew word moed, time is connected to a place. So bring one of those thoughts in the back of your mind, how we connected moed to a place. So the word for time to a place, which is the tent of meeting in the Torah. So we do know that time is connected to a place where it occurs. As it was in the Torah, as it was wherever his presence was, in the tabernacle, in the temple, in the festivals, wherever it may be, and wherever his presence was and will be throughout history. Hence, it is very natural to connect the existence of time in general to where all specific recorded moments of time have ever taken place, which is the world. So everything that's written in history books, in the Bible, is in the world as we know it. And that's, I guess, what we would call all of time. All of time is a collection of the moments that we know about that have occurred in history. And when this world ends, it is only logical to think that time as we know it will also go with it. Time is a subset of eternity. And we can show this very simply. First, we need to start with God, who is the basis of all existence. We say in the Shema every week, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuto Le'olam Va'ed. And this is commonly translated as, Blessed be the name of his glorious kingdom forever and ever. However, there are some rabbis who translate it in a slightly different way. And it translates as this. Blessed is his name, comma, whose kingdom is forever and ever. So it's a slight difference there. You know, in the Hebrew, there's no commas, there's no full stops. It's just it's a word, so it means a sentence. So it's up to the interpreters, really, to actually put the emphasis where they sort of see fit, or they sort of see fit in terms of the tradition or in terms of their knowledge of the Bible as a whole. Funny enough, placing that one comma in the Hebrew changes how we interpret this verse. And hence, from this reading of the verse, we learn that God is indeed eternal or exists forever and ever. So Le'olam Va'ed in Hebrew is literally forever and ever, like for all, you know, for all of eternity. And we can also consider this seemingly simple verse uttered by Yeshua a couple times. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will not pass away. So it's quoted in Matthew and it's quoted in Luke. Seems pretty, you know, mundane. He's saying that his words will last forever. Yeah, that's nice. That's very comforting to us and probably to his disciples all those years ago. But if we consider it a bit more deeply, if we work from the basis that Jesus is being God's mouthpiece, what is he saying? He is saying that heaven and earth and hence time will pass away, but the word of the Lord will not pass away. Since the words of God outlive time itself, there must be something outside of time that exists. And that something is God and whatever he says. And I hope that makes sense. It is a bit abstract, but A, it's not only interesting, but B, I think it can also be really practical. How are we to understand time from a biblical perspective? That's question three. So I will try and sort of, at the moment, I've sort of said a lot. I've dragged bits and pieces from different parts of the Bible, and it's probably not really very helpful yet. I will attempt in the last two questions to really distill it into its essence and what I wanted to take away from this talk today. So I think if we really boil it down, we can conclude two main points about the biblical teaching on time. I have 3 points, but it's really 2 points. I don't know why I said that, anyway. I think it's 2 points, but it doesn't really matter, 2 or 3, take a pick. So the first point, I think we have proven that time is the period from creation until the end of days, the time from creation until the dawn of the Messianic era. In our understanding, that is when God, through the Messiah, will come to the earth a second time to judge it and restore it. This process will end the earth as we know it, and hence time as we know it will also end. Involved in this is immense destruction and death, so this is an event to be feared, but also will result in restoration and closeness to God for the elect, so this is also a day to be hastened. Hence, we can understand the period of Earth's existence as we know it as time. And that is a subset of eternity, which transcends time in ways we cannot calculate. Time and eternity are not the same thing. Time is precious as it is the period of eternity that God has allowed the earth to exist, and he has given it to mankind as a gift. We are constantly reminded to make best use of this time, to do good, to do God's will. As opposed to the world, the motivations behind our efficient use of time must be directed upwards with a view towards God's plan on earth and with the awareness that time is not ours to keep. This is where we differ from the world, who uses time as a commodity to be sold for sustenance and personal gain. So the final question that I have for us today is, how does this knowledge apply to us today directly? Many of you who know me by now will, you know I have very little patience for things which do not apply to us directly in our lives. So as you know, even though we're talking about very abstract, almost cosmological things, I do think it's good for us to find the really nitty-gritty practical elements. So another way we can ask this question is as follows. How does this knowledge regarding the nature and duration of time influence how we use it? And this will look different for different people, and I believe everyone can come up with sort of their own answer in their own lives. But I think there are a few key takeaway points. We need to treat it with great care. And how do we understand this? We understand this from its fleeting nature. We tend to, as human beings, care for things more when we know we're going to run out of it one day. You know, people in Australia with, even though Australia has many droughts, most Australians don't run out of water, but many places around the world, water is very scarce. I'm not sure if many South Africans here among us may remember the Cape Town, day zero when they were worried that the water would run out. You know, many of those people are Western people like us, but they took care of the water much more than we would because it was going to run out. And if we know that time would eventually run out, we would be encouraged to take more care of it. Not only our personal time on Earth, not our 70, 80, 100 years, God willing, 120 years, but time overall will eventually run out for the Earth. We also need to use it wisely, and that means to do good deeds. We learn this from the coming judgment that will come at the end of time. We are judged for our faith and where we stand, but also for our deeds as well, so we need to use our time well. We need to avoid selfish uses of time and use it on tasks with a view towards heaven. I'm not saying that personal hobbies become sinful or that making money is sinful, but things always have an end goal in mind. What is our end goal? Is it to bring forth the kingdom of God? Is it to bring our restoration to ourselves and the world? Or is it to chase after worthless, selfish things? Or worse, bring destruction to others and the world? And I guess it's a real world example to contrast this. You know, people can make money for different reasons. You know, there's many rich people on earth, and I think being rich is neither a good or a bad thing in itself. But there are people who are very generous with their money and they use it for very good projects, projects to support ministry, for example, or to support humanitarian projects. There are many things people use money well. And there are also people who use money for very bad things, which I don't think I'll need to give examples of. So it's not so much the specific tasks themselves, but what's the result of the tasks? And in this way, we can sort of figure out how if our use of time is looking upwards or inwards. And to understand that time is fleeting, it is not eternity, it is but a speck in eternity. And this helps bring perspective into our lives and leaves us with nothing to boast about in this world, except our place with God in eternity. So I mentioned very briefly at the start, for many of us, being busy, having things to do is an idol for many of us, myself included at times. It's almost a thing we boast about. I'm going to do business in this town today. I'm going to go, you know, for myself, I'm going to go save lives today. I'm using my time. It's like, you know, it can be a thing to take pride in for our own selfish purposes. But if we understand how fleeting time is and how time is not something that belongs to us in the first place, and even the whole period of time and existence is but a speck of God's eternity, there's very little to boast about, really, as James says. So yeah, that's what I have to say today. I hope that was useful, and thank you very much. Okay.